Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters Edition. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us shortly. And today on the podcast, well, we don't have any Vikings news. We already went over the schedule last week. Of course, we'd like to appreciate everybody listening to us during this time anyway. Overall, appreciate it. But, you know, last week we talked about the new schedule that broke that day, last Thursday. We talked about some free agent acquisitions that we still need to make at guard and corner. We'll save all that stuff. But we also talked about the 1987 Vikings run to the conference final. We talked really all the way from 80 to the end of the 90s, or not to the end of the 90s, but end of the 80s. And, you know, we kind of brought you through that process. So that was a really fun to go over all those names. So we definitely like to send our thoughts out there for everybody that's still working as an essential worker out there, that's risking it every day. People who are having some problems and you know, stressed out and a lot of stuff on their plate. We definitely, our thoughts go out to you. And also, we just appreciate you, you know, that we could be a distraction for you. Got to get that out of the way for sure to talk about that, because we really appreciate it. So on this one, like I said, we're not really going to have a bunch of Vikings news right now. We hope in the next couple of weeks we get a cornerback and a guard, but who knows? So what we figured, we'll just continue our run here of reminiscing about the old Vikings clubs here. So we're going to start right with 90. You know, we'll start with the 1990 season. 90 and 91, Jerry Burns was still here, and then obviously Denny Green came in. And we'll just go over some of the stuff we remember, and we got to obviously, you know, start listing off all these names of the roster and how it changed. And of course, you know, we had the clips last week. We have some audio clips of the Randy Moss Dallas Cowboy Thanksgiving. Everybody gets a turkey leg. Game where Moss went for three catches, a buck something, buck 68 or something like that. Buck, I think it was 163. He also, I had forgotten this, he also got a 2-point conversion. So it's almost like four touchdowns. So we're going to play some clips off that. You got to hear John Madden. It's so fun to hear Madden talking a bunch of stuff about Moss. Like, well, you just throw the ball up there and it's all good, you know? So we're going to go all the way to, of course, it's called Living in Loserville. So, of course, this show ends on some heartbreak, just like last week with Darren Nelson right at the goal line. But we're going to have fun going there. And we'll talk about that season with a little detail, the 98 season, of course. And you know, 99 a little bit as well. So we'll definitely take you through all this. Real quick, though, if this is your first time listening to the Purple People Eaters edition of the Living in Loserville podcast, you can find it right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. Okay, so it streams live and archives right here on the platform, but you don't have to just go to Blog Talk and download it or listen to it in the browser. This show right here is under the Ropeadope Radio podcast, and it's available almost everywhere at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere I just listed, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn to find the platform. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. They got a great sponsor over there. It's betnow.eu with the promo code TGT. So that's thegruelingtruth.com. It's football, baseball, basketball, boxing, everything in between, hockey, almost everything, right? So one more thing, okay? If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have and you're not quite happy, obviously a ton of us who aren't the essential workers working their ass off right now, a lot of people, because you've been staying at home, have been, you know, uploading, archiving a lot of stuff. So I got something for you, though. It's pretty affordable. It's called AT&T TV Now. I actually do it myself. It's live streaming cable. They do have a 7-day free trial. The plans start as low as $55 a month. There's no annual contract as well. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. That's AT&T TV Now. Like I said, live streaming cable. However, if you're in a part of the country, in a part of the state or whatever you are, or by the airport where your internet's kind of shaky, They do have AT&T TV, okay? That's your normal cable platform. It's a growing platform. It's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, parts of New York, in New York City, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, parts of California, all the way up to Seattle in the Northwest, other places like St. Louis in the Midwest. It's available at a fair amount of areas, let's put it that way. Not everywhere, but basically just Google it, AT&T TV. Put your area code in there, see if you got it. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now. Like I said, that's live streaming cable. Okay. All right. And like I said, a lot of people have Netflix or Amazon, and it's a lot different to just archive something rather than a live streaming. So they do offer both. So here we are. Okay. I'm going to bring in my co-host, Aaron, and just kind of see how he's doing. How's it going, Aaron, man? How you hanging in there, man? This thing has been a long, we're basically like this Monday or Tuesday coming up is going to be 2 months that we've been out of work, which is pretty freaking crazy, dude.
Yeah. I mean, who would have thought that, it would have been 2 months. I mean, I thought maybe it'd go long, but I guess we really didn't know when it began, but now we're 2 months in. Time's been kind of going fast, but at the same time going slow, and you want to find some purpose and maybe get back to work and do the thing that you like to do the most.
I'm getting a little siren over there. I don't know if...
Yeah, we got a little ambulance activity outside the window. I got the window shut, too, but that sound kind of cuts through, so...
That's fine. I was just making sure that the window's shut. That's cool. This is a live show, so that works. Now, you're right. It is... It feels like time flies, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, we got this. And here, we're actually opening up... Partially the last couple of Mondays, I think it equaled to like 130,000 people that went back to work on a limited basis as far as like retails. Now this Monday are going to – some retail areas are going to be all, you know, open and stuff. It sounds like June 1st they're going to try to get the bars and restaurants and other stuff, churches and all that up and running. So hopefully that we hit the ground running for the summer because, dude – A week from now, less than a week from now, if you look at Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, dude, highs of 80 degrees, dude. So I'm glad that the stay at home is at least off so they can open up like all these parks and all that. So,
man, I love spring, man. I mean, spring's such a great day.
We have one, you know?
Right. It's such a great day that you just can't really compare it to anything, you know, because it's so short. That was a little joke. It didn't land very well.
You know, they don't all stick on the wall. You know, you throw them up there and some of them just fall off. So no big
deal. Yeah, I mean, 80 degrees sounds really nice right though now, though. I mean, the leaves are coming back. That's really good to see. But now you really want to get out there and enjoy it. So, you know, hopefully we can, you know, incrementally open things back up, get back out there, get busy again, and get back to life, I guess, as we knew it partially anyway.
And it actually has gone up a handful of degrees the last couple of hours. It's up to 70 right now, high of 71 and sunny. Looks like it's going to rain over the weekend. But, man, Monday, high of 73. Tuesday, all sun, even though by the time we get there, it won't be that. 78, high of 82, 3 days in a row. Next Saturday, 80. Like, dude, I'm so happy right now. Anyway, let's get down to business, shall we? Let's get down to business. So, like I said, 90 and 91, we were still having to, like, have a censorship bleep button ready for Jerry Burns and his post-press conferences because you just never knew what was going to come out of Jerry's mouth. And I now am pissed off that I didn't get – I had a little audio of him last week, but maybe next week when we do a show, we'll have some audio of him cussing. Because that shit's funny, dude. Oh, my God. But at this time, you know, we actually 90. We were 6 and 10. Points-wise, we still could put up some points at 9 out of the 28 teams. And it's funny just to see 28 teams back then, too. So we had Rich Gannon, of course. We talked about this right at the end last year or last week. Herschel Walker, we had this certain trade that didn't quite go as well as we thought it would. And we still had the fullback in play, which is something that changed once Denny got here on the West Coast. Although, you know, it's different versions of the West Coast because Jerry Burns was West Coast, but he preferred the fullback, which at the time was Alfred Anderson. Gotta love him too at the time. Anthony Carter, Hassan Jones, Steve Jordan, Zimmerman, McDaniel, Loudermilk, Irwin. We still had a ton of dudes on our squad that we knew from that 87 run. Browner was still there. Carl Lee was still there. Studwell, a guy, he was in his eighth season by that time. I'm sorry, that threw me off. 13, I was wondering, I was like, eight, that doesn't make sense. 13th season by that time. Chris Dolman, Henry Thompson, and also Al Noga came into the scene. So, you know, we started to kind of turn the corner. Then it was 8-8 in 91. Still had, you know, Gannon under center. And it says it's listed as fullback. And, you know, we ran the ball so many times back then. People did in general. So you saw a lot more fullbacks. But rookie year, he got 120 carries, 563 yards. Terry Allen joined the squad as a rookie to go along with Herschel, still at AC. And really everyone that I listed earlier. But the one big addition, and I said Steve Jordan, I believe, as well. But one of the biggest additions in 91 was a guy who we didn't really know a ton about. He had 72 catches, almost 1,000 yards, and 5 touchdowns. This guy named Chris Carter. Do you remember that guy? I'm pretty sure I remember that guy.
What I have a vague memory. We got him for $100, a case of beer, and just anything we could give him. I think we had to legally give them something for him. So I think it was literally $100, and I think that was really it. Just something like to cover his travel or something. Like
Philly pool really, tab, we got him some
tabs. Something like that. Philly really wanted to get rid of him. He had his alcohol problems at the time. But, I mean, he was always pretty good. I remember watching him play for the Eagles when Reggie White was on that team. And, you know, he was a good player. He just wasn't working out for them. So we ended up getting him. What year was that, Chris? 92?
91.
Yeah, so it was him and AC at that time. So it was Carter and Carter for like a season or so. And, I mean, he just hit the ground running here and really made his presence felt.
Yeah, he really did, dude. And you're like, oh, wow, this guy, how did they give up on him? This dude's a stud. And that is fun to see. I think it was like 2 seasons worth of the double Carter. Randall McDaniel joined the club as well. That was a big one. Moving on to 92. Then we had, and I'll get to the other names that we're all going to know, but we had to Google this one a little bit. Barry Ward. I mean, he was just out of nowhere. I looked and said, who? In 92, I was like, Barry White? Who are we talking about? I don't remember this guy. And sure enough, Barry Ward. He was 30 at the time, and you Googled him. What'd you find out, sir?
Well, I found out he was, and it kind of jogged my memory a little bit, that he played for Kansas City. He was part of that backfield with Christian Okoye in the probably late 80s, obviously early 90s. And they had that 1-2 punch of really big backs, hard to tackle, just big guys. And he was the other one. So he was the off back. And I guess maybe they moved on from that style. And he ended up with the Vikings in 93 or 92. And seemed like he played pretty well. I have a vague memory of it. I know we watched the games back then, but he must not have played a heck of a lot or made a very big impression because he doesn't stick out in my head. I think he wore number 33 for the Vikings.
Yeah, he was a vet by that, too, at age 30 in his sixth year. Yeah, that one threw me off. I was like, man, you know, I remember a lot of these guys, but I sure don't necessarily remember him. And then, like I mentioned with Denny Green, brought in the double tight ends. And then we had, well, of course, we had Steve Jordan. We know him very well, very productive tight end. But then Ticey came. He was age 34 in his 12th year. Dude only had 6 catches, so pretty sure that he used to block a little bit. You know, I'm sure he was he was a great offensive coach or offensive lineman coach, I should say. So Ticey brought some depth to that position. And you started to see our defense. Some names you remember, some names. It was starting to fall off just minorly by 93. and in 93, so the Ward, that didn't really ring a bell. Of course, double Carters we still had. But Jim McMahon. We had Ever Lindsay was a rookie that year too. Al Noga, by that time, I think maybe the year before, he was their D tackle. But Jim McMahon, and I remember playing the Giants, and it looked like he died on the field that day. He was already in. I mean, how many years was he in? But 11th year, and that was like, you know, he played 12 games that year. That's 11th year taking a beating. That year, I remember he took a beating, and I'm pretty sure he almost died. Maybe he got another fork in his eye or something like that with McMahon. Remember he had that patch?
Yeah. Vague memories of McMahon here. I think he played really one season here of extended time. Yep. Like I thought he had a decent year, but it was kind of in that transition. You know, that was sort of the beginning of the Viking quarterback carousel because we kind of went from Gannon. Wilson and Gannon, yep, and Kramer to having some stability there. And then it just after that, I mean, we'll just continue to chronicle the changing at quarterback and how it goes. But another name that sticks out to me is Fuad Rivas, the kicker. Yeah. You always got to bring him up. Remember Quadri Ismail?
The Rocket, man.
Yeah, I think he's probably doing mostly kick returns at the time. Yeah. Because he came on kind of slow as a receiver. I think he finished off his career here as a receiver who was, you know, more or less effective. But I think he came out right away as a kick returner, and it was somewhat effective. But he was obviously the brother of Rocket Ismail out of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I always remember that because it looks like Wilkes-Barre, but it's like Wilkes-Barre.
Right.
And then he went to Notre Dame, and then I think Ismail went to Syracuse. And so I followed that guy a little bit, yep. Dolman. Carlos Jenkins was a linebacker that kind of sticks out to me a little bit. Jack Del Rio was on that squad in 93, Fred Strickland. So, yeah, I mean, he had good linebackers. And Del Rio obviously went on to do many other things in the NFL, so that was a name worth noting kind of along with Tice.
Yeah, that's a good call, yeah. Definitely. He's had a really successful career. Dwayne Washington joined as a rookie. He was a guy that hung around for quite a while. And, of course, Eddie Mack. You know, by the time we get to 94, you know, now, talking, and it's a great transition, Warren Moon stepped in the place. And he had a pretty damn good season there for a couple of years. It was just Terry Allen in the backfield by that time, too, in his third year. And you could see, you know, Todd Stussy was a rookie that year. Andrew Jordan, and that was the other tight end. By that time, Steve Jordan was gone. So we had Adrian Cooper and Andrew Jordan in the double tight end spot. So that was something that was a little bit different. You started to see, like I mentioned, Jeff Christie as well come in there. Jake Reed now was next to Chris Carter. I mentioned Todd Stussy, I believe. So then you get into 95, and that year they were 10-6. And I believe in 94, and I remember this, they had beaten Chicago twice during the regular season. The second time, I believe, was at home, but it wasn't overtime. I remember that. And, of course, wild card weekend, first game in the playoffs, obviously, and we got to play Chicago for a third time. And we know how that works in the NFL when you got to play a team three times and you've beaten them twice. To beat the Bears a third time, it wasn't going to happen. I remember that. I remember them losing to that going, damn it, I wish we could have just lost to once. We would have won this game. It was just that living in Loserville stuff, you know?
And the sticker to that was that we lost to, I think, was his name Steve Walsh out of Creighton Durham Hall. Went on to play college at, yeah, I think, did he go to Miami?
Miami, yep.
Yep, and then he came back, went to the Bears, was somewhat good, and then beat us in that playoff game that you speak of. Yeah, so that was interesting. And then we got, remember, Dwayne Washington came in on that squad in 95. He was a good corner, wore number 20, Orlando Thomas. We talked about his tackling a little bit, or lack thereof. Kind of had that safety, man. We've had two or three. You can throw Sendejo in on this one. Just got to take another shot at him. But Orlando Thomas, Corey Fuller, who's a mouthy corner. We talked about him a few weeks ago. Eddie Mack was up in that defense.
Eddie Mack, the undersized demon, dude. Yep. I loved Eddie Mack.
And then I think we had Corey Stringer as a rookie that season, which, you know, later would fill out in the 90s.
Yep, you're right. Brand new rook. And that year, also, when we're into right around the 95, we had Robert Smith, like you mentioned, Orlando Thomas. And that year, there was that's when you started to see our defensive line go, huh, really? Okay, so what happened? So we had Derek Alexander, and that was the year Warren Sapp was sitting for us right at the – in Tampa Bay, I literally think it was the next pick or two picks later or something like that. They, of course, picked him because, you know, he had tested positive for marijuana and I believe coke, but I'm not sure. But it's kind of like, dude, first of all, he went to Miami, okay, at South Beach. And second of all, one of his best friends was Marley's kid. Bob Marley's kid was like a safety or a linebacker at Miami. So you're hanging out with Marley's kid. You don't think you're going to smoke some weed? Like, come on, dude. But that was a big thing. Like, oh, no. And then he was in the Hall of Fame. So I guess I bring that up on some – God, I remember that. But also, by that time, it was just John Randall that we knew then, you know, really, on that line. So it was starting to – Broderick Thomas, man, I haven't heard that one in a while. Wow, I forgot that guy. So they were 8-8 that year in 95. And I think Jeff Christie in 96 came along. And like I mentioned, that D line was kind of strange.
Yeah, I mean these were the years where we could not find a defensive end. Do you remember? That's why we ended up with Derek Alexander. We took a shot on him, kid out of Michigan State, the army pants on. What was his name? He came a little bit later in the 90s, but he was an outright disaster. We just couldn't find a defensive end. I mean, on that 95 team, you had the Roy Barker and Derek Alexander experiment. And then I think in 96, they tried to move someone else in or sign somebody else there. Quickly look at that. But, yeah, that was where we could not find a defensive end, and there was all kinds of theory. Fernando Smith.
That's what it was.
The guy in 96.
I had him there. I said, this is him. Good call on him. Yep.
But he's not the kid I'm talking about out of Michigan State. He comes a little bit later, okay. But that was the No, that was the Demetrius Underwood, but that's a couple years from now. The names comes back. But, yeah, Fernando Smith rings a bell, Derek Alexander, still John Randall in there, and then we had Asura Tuolo at the other three technique, and he managed to hold that spot down for a couple seasons, it seems.
Yeah, well, we did bring in what's-his-toes the next year, Jerry Ball as well. So he kind of – I think they kind of rotated. You know, I think he was a third-down guy to get after him, too. And Talley, I remember Talley, I believe he was with the Bills for a long time, Bills. Too. Yep. God dang, I remember Talley, dude, that linebacker. Wow. Huh. Dixon Edwards, I think we brought him up. I'm not sure. Brady, even Jeff Brady, I do remember him. I do remember him. So, yeah, you start to look at that secondary, too. Fuller, Washington, Griff, Thomas. It was pretty much set there for that going into that season. And we were still on some Warren Moon in 96. So we had kind of stuck with Moon because he had been producing. I mean, no doubt about it. Now, that year, it wasn't as good. We actually were – actually, yeah, it had dropped by that time, 23 of 30 for scoring, 23 out of 30. So we're already up to 30 teams by that time. So then 97 comes around. And speaking of playoffs, that's where it was starting to – the Denny Green stuff – although they improved up to 11th out of 30th in scoring 22 points a game. And Brad Johnson, who I remember Brad Johnson, we used to always say this shit when we'd be like in the dark throwing a ball or just randomly throwing a football. Brad Johnson looked like a deer in headlights when he first got on the squad as a rookie in preseason. I remember you and a couple other people, me and you used to always have this ongoing joke of, I don't know if Brad Johnson's ever going to be a starter because this fucking guy looks like a deer in headlights. And sure enough, he had a really good year that first year, but it was injuries when he was here. That was his thing, and that's why we had to kind of get rid of him because it was like, well, you're going to pay this guy, but he's been hurt, you know, and obviously we'll talk about who he brought in after that. But Brad Johnson, you know, he went on to have a decent career with Washington, but I remember looking at him when he was younger going, I'm not sure about this guy.
Yeah, he had the happy feet. I mean, he just couldn't keep his feet planted in the pocket. And so, yeah, we had that joke about it. Just, hey, you know, where you just fucking get rid of the ball. And, yeah, I remember that one. And then, you know, Robert Smith came in that 97. He might have got there a year earlier. But, he was injured, too, all the time. And he had long legs. And, you know, he'd get, you know, hit by the sideline and his legs or his knees, something would happen. And that's when he just couldn't stay on the field. He just, you know, kept getting hurt and hurting people. The way you keep him, you get rid of him. What do you do? And that was the question marks in that season. Brad Johnson, could he stay healthy? You had a defense that was kind of roaming into shape a little bit, and I'm not sure, but I think that might have been the Mike Tomlin year. I don't want to say that because maybe that's way too early, but I think it was
a tad early, but maybe he was a secondaries coach though by that time.
Might have been with the organization at that time, but this is when the team starts to kind of form together. You got on the offensive line Stussy, McDaniel, Christie, Dixon, Stringer. That was the same. That was the offensive line we had going forward. You still had some defensive ends that were, Fernando Fisk. Smith. Jason Fisk. You had Derek Alexander. By that time, your linebackers had kind of gotten down. You had McDaniel and Brady, and then Dixon Edwards. So, I mean, you started to see the formations of that team that started to make a little noise.
Yeah, and that's, like I mentioned earlier, just a couple minutes ago, this is when it was kind of like, all right, Denny, you've been here for a while. What's going on with our offense? You're supposed to be this offensive guy, and he could draft like crazy in all those quarterbacks we talked about, but I remember that comeback in 97, 23-22, wild card comeback at what would that be? What was that stadium called, the Giants stadium? Is it East Rutherford or is that what it was? East Rutherford?
Meadowlands. Was it the Meadowlands?
Meadowlands. I think you're right. I think that's a good call. So that I remember that rally comeback, and I remember I was actually helping out and doing like some independent film around the local Twin Cities. And I remember us popping on the game because we had a little break. And then we saw like the last chunk of the game. We're like, oh shit, we won. And so it kind of saved them, kind of got them going. And then obviously 1998. And Randy Moss was a guy that got on that club. 15-1, as we know, number one out of 30, 34. We averaged 34.8, so basically 35 points a game. The most points scored, ever at that time. There's only been a couple of the Patriots and the Rams, I think 2 years after that, beat it. But then we brought in the old schooler, Randall Cunningham, and Jimmy Hitchcock at corner, a veteran corner, and Jerry Ball to hold down that middle with Randall. But in Leroy Horde, and what was that line that Madden had on Leroy Horde?
Leroy Horde was it? If you need 3 yards, he'll get you 3 yards. If you need 5 yards, he'll get you 3 yards. And that was not too far from the truth. I mean, he had some good plays, but he was a ground and pound kind of running back. Very in that role was great for it, a short yardage guy. But every once in a while broke a long one, but not very often. He kind of got you what you needed to move the chains.
Right, and I think I said that wrong off the show earlier when we talked about it. I think it is if you need a yard. I think I said
that. Yeah.
If you need a yard, he'll get you three. If you need five, he'll get you three. That shit, that's just the Madden right there, dude. That's Madden all over. But obviously, Randy, took the freaking, league by storm, to say the least. I mean, you had him next to Carter. By that time, we had three wide receiver set, obviously. Three deep, Moss, Carter, Reed, and Andrew Glover was the tight end at that time, a sole tight end. Was a pretty solid tight end, like we mentioned. We mentioned Devin Alexander. Obviously, we'll bring him up a little later. Gary Anderson had a pretty good year that year. 30 during the regular season, 16 games, 35 of 35 for field goals, and 59 of 59 for extra points. So he had a pretty good season, I guess. Mitch Berger was a damn good. Oh, David Palmer. David Palmer from Alabama. Yeah. He was a fun little player that on third down could go off, and obviously he was punt, return, and kick report. Was it a deuce, little 22, little scat back?
Yep, deuce.
Man. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that squad was pretty – that was a great squad. Offensive line was good. Like you said, we, highlighted that coming together in 97. And then, Moss, you look at his – he drops to 21 in the draft. He had some issues. Denny was just sitting there waiting on him. At 21, he got through Dallas, who said he was going to draft him. They didn't. He fell through, and we picked him up, and then we didn't really hear much about him at all until, you know, the preseason. They kept him pretty quiet in training camp. So you knew, well, this, you know, you heard a few things slip out like this kid's good, but we didn't really hear much about it. And then right when the preseason started, he hit the field and began a season, which for a rookie stat line here of 69 catches, 1,313 yards, 17 touchdowns, one rushing touchdown for 4 yards. That's as a rookie. And he's really made his mark. That rookie year was spectacular catches. He was all over the place, really changed the dynamic of the team, led to the record, changed the offense. Now we went back to one tight end, three receivers, and really started the ball moving for a historic season for the Vikings.
Yeah, and he changed the game, too, the jump ball game. There was a couple of games early, that Tampa Bay game, and I remember I was dating a girl who was actually moving to the East Coast to go to college, and we took off right after that game ended. And I remember just in a great mood, like, dude, this Randy dude. We've been holding him off. Like you said, I had seen him against Michigan. I had seen him against West Virginia. I had seen him when he was at Marshall hurdling dudes on punt returns. And I knew it was a steal. I had no clue the steal level of, like you said, those stats. No one's gotten 17 touchdowns. I mean, you barely get 17 touchdowns anyway, let alone as a freaking rookie. But the jump ball aspect and the fact that that Green Bay game, now, he broke out with that tip little pass that he managed to corral right when he was going into the back of the end zone at Tampa Bay, that deep bomb. But the real breakout was like 5 catches, buck 90 or something on Monday Night Football in Green Bay, dude. And he's like, I'm going to grab it. Oh, excuse me, just kind of hop over, you know, Darren Sharper on the ground or whatever. And that really freaked out the Packers, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it did. They drafted corners for the next 3 to 4 seasons, and it makes total sense. I mean, I think that catch that, like you already illustrated, when he caught the bouncing ball off the helmet, that was a preseason game against Tampa Bay at the Dome. Brad Johnson was the quarterback then, because Randall didn't come in until Brad got hurt on some stuff that season. He brought Randall in, and ever since Randall came in, I mean, Randall said, this is going to be easy, man. Just chuck the ball. And that's what he did. And, yeah, so, I mean, you knew right away that the kid had an amazing ability, one, to track the ball, two, to catch the ball, three, he was fast, and he just looked different than everybody else, long-legged dude, tall, skinny. You just thought, the sky's the limit on this guy. But nobody knew, Chris. I mean, even you see him at Marshall, you could not have thought that he would just dominate the NFL the way that he did. You thought too highly of the NFL game, but he came in and just tore it up.
And that Tampa game was actually game one. You're right, though. Like, we knew about him, but fuck, especially when you had Carter and Reed, you're like, oh, you know, it'll be perfect. He doesn't have to play that big of a role. But when you look at the first, we went 7-0, ended up losing our first game 27-24 on the road at Tampa Bay. But when you look at, dude, I mean, 31 points, 38 points, 29. I don't think we went below 24. Actually, our only loss that year during the regular season was two times, 24 and 24. We won a game against the Bengals, 24-3. But otherwise, we're still the only team to at least score 24 points in every game in the history of the NFL right now. But when you look at some of these numbers, dude, total yards, 421. 545, 435, 465. And this is back in the day when you didn't have all these crazy, a quarterback would throw for 400 yards. But that's what was happening. Threw for 442 in one game, 303, even 353, 349. Like, even going over 300 wasn't something that you continually do. You know what I mean? But then the game came on Thanksgiving, and living in Loserville, like we all do, who's, you know, at least a Vikings fan anyway, those Thanksgiving games against Dallas, it was like a couple years in a row. And when you look back at it, even though we didn't know at the time, those were basically our Super Bowls. You know, that was our, hey, dude, we did it. We got Carter, Robert Smith, Cunningham, and Moss all sitting there eating a big old turkey bone, you know, a turkey just with Madden and stuff. And we, like, 2 or 3 years in a row on Thanksgiving, we would just devour Dallas. And it was fun because they had beaten us up pretty well. And obviously we had a bone to pick because, you know, they ended up doing pretty good off that Herschel Walker trade.
Yeah, they sure did. I mean, they got built a dynasty, won some Super Bowls. And going into that Thanksgiving Day game, we thought that would be a test, perhaps, because we had a pretty nice record. I think we were undefeated going into that year. Might have known we lost to Tampa.
Just one loss because of Tampa.
Yep. Lost to Tampa. But so we were riding high. I mean, this was it. We had this unstoppable offense and unstoppable players on that offense. And we were just thinking, okay, you just didn't want to get our bubble burst. We didn't want anybody to get hurt, didn't want anything else. And we saw one of the most spectacular performances that the NFL has ever seen. I mean, Moss's game, that game, I think he caught one really long ball, another really long ball, and then caught like a hitch and just – hit the Jets and took it, you know. And
that guy's got the angle. He's got the angle. Oh, he just doesn't have the angle. Wow, I thought he had the angle.
Yeah, he just didn't have angles on him. And then like you reminded me of the 2-point conversion as well. So that was just a thorough domination on Thanksgiving Day. Dallas Cowboys in Dallas. Moss had a chip on his shoulder because Jerry Jones said he was going to take him and didn't take him, and he just had a perfect video game type of day. And that was when you kind of knew, okay, this team's for real. How far can we go? Who's coming up on the schedule? Any tests coming up? You know, where am I going to stand at the Super Bowl champions parade in downtown
Miami? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and by that time we had two Twins. It seems like forever ago, 87-91, but we had had two Twins championships. I had watched it in middle school the first time. Like, they took the half the day off. They'd let you have the half a day off. And we had, like, some big screens that they put up, and we just watched it there. And then when we got a little older then, we actually went to the parade and all that. And there's a whole bunch of funny stuff going through oh, God, I remember a big story with that. City Center, some shit popped off at City Center, and it was not a good thing. People were getting trampled. We'll save that for another time. But I remember the Chicago game, too. There'd be, like, two or three guys around Randy in the end zone. And he just pop up and catch it. And like, dude, you had him. No, I didn't have him. Like, and always like that whole, they don't play the PlayStation like us. You know, Mouse had so many funny lines, but that golly, Randall, they can't jump with me. Just throw the ball, Randall. Don't worry about it. I got you. You know, it was funny, but you got to hear some of these clips. Thanksgiving Day with freaking, you know, a iconic crew. Led by Madden, of course, but Sutherland as well. You just listen to some of this here.
Robert Smith is back from Minnesota. And he is throwing it back to Cunningham, the old flea flicker. Open is Randy Moss, and in the end zone is a Minnesota touchdown.
Yep, you knew they were going to do it. The fans knew they were going to do it. The Dallas Cowboys knew they were going to do it. You knew they were going to do it early. Where Randall Cunningham just gets that ball, and he just chucks it deep to Randy Moss. That was off a flea flicker on the right side. Kevin Smith was a defender. He takes a little bite. Here's Kevin Smith here, and you're going to see him take a little bite there. He looks back. He sees the pitch. Too late. And by now, it's too
late. Way too late. That was the thing. It's done. It's over.
Back to throw it and going deep, and he's got Moss, and there's the flag on the play, and Moss has caught the pass and is in the end zone anyway. Touchdown, just throw it as far as you can.
This guy is amazing. Randy Moss is amazing. Randall Cunningham is amazing. That Randall Cunningham was telling us last week that Moss just tells him, hey, dog, just chuck it in the end zone. And he said he already told him, just chuck it in, and that's exactly what he does.
Six defense.
I love that Madden saying dog when dog was starting to get popular.
They went to work on Kevin Smith, and he was in there. He got a penalty, and Randy Moss still caught it.
The Vikings have 29 touchdown drives, if you can call them drives, this year of 3 minutes or less.
Well, this guy is just fun to watch. And Kevin Smith knows that he's in a foot race there, and he can't win it. So he grabbed Randy Moss. And that was the only thing that he could do. And that wouldn't have given him a chance anyway.
And the extra point is good.
That would have put the ball on the 5-yard line.
I tell you what, you watch these two guys, Cunningham, the veteran, and Moss, the rookie, and I don't know how you stop them.
I don't either. And you know, and they're so fun to watch. I mean, yeah. You know, you can put two guys on and that doesn't do any good because Randy Moss could just outrun him. And Randall Cunningham could throw the ball as far as Randy Moss can run, or darn near as far.
He has two catches for 107 yards and two touchdowns.
Yeah, I don't like to go overboard on a thing, but I start to say this is the second week in a row that we saw Randy Moss, and I think right now he's the best wide receiver in football.
The most dangerous, I think, without question.
Ball down to
Here's the two-point conversion.
Cunningham's going to make another jump ball, and Moss just takes it away. Just toss it out there, and Randy Moss is going to come down with it. The Cowboys showing blitz. Minnesota. Randy Moss breaks a tackle, and Randy Moss races down the sideline, and Randy Moss just outruns everybody into the end zone. He is incredible.
It's just so fun to listen to those old clips. And I'm looking at that. I saw that, like you said, that little one hitch, and he actually takes a hitch, starts running, and it actually the guy had an angle on him, and he looked like he was going to go on the inside a half second, and then just kept going straight, and it was just like, okay. And that's what happens when you don't have Deion Sanders, and it probably half of that would have happened easy. But that's – I remember Deion was out of that game, and it's like, yeah, you should have had Deion on. But obviously, like I said, looking back at that, just hearing Madden talking about that during his rookie season, it's just funny how he's like, you know what? I hate to overdo it, but this kid's just crazy. It's just so fun to hear Madden with that old stuff, man.
Well, it was like the first time you saw anybody that you just couldn't overthrow. I mean, you kept trying to – I mean, post-Randall Cunningham, we kept trying to get guys in here who had big arms that could just chuck the ball. You had Culpepper, you had the gunslinger, Jeff George. And yep. So you had these guys that could just chuck the ball because you knew Randy could catch anything that you threw out. He could track and catch any ball. And that just, I don't think that was seen before in the NFL where you could just not outthrow a guy. He was that fast. And the thing is, he's a long strider, so he didn't look like he was that fast. But then you just saw him run by everybody, run past everybody. If you caught him, you were lucky. And Madden probably wanted to go ahead and say a little bit more, but he just kind of held himself back because, I mean, turned out to be the best receiver that ever played this game. But, I mean, it was his rookie season. What are you going to say about that at that point in time, right, except for what Madden said? I think he wrapped it up perfectly, and he had a knack for doing that. But, I mean, you could just tell he was blown away, and Summerall was blown away, and the league was blown away. We were blown away. Everybody was blown away. Randy was incredible. And that season was just an eye-opener of what the NFL is now.
Yeah, exactly. And after that loss to Tampa, like you said, 31-24 over the Saints, 24-3 over the Bengals, 28-14. I want to say it was either Fuller or Hitchcock that had a pick six in that game. Cowboys, 46-36 in that game. But 48 the next week, 48-22. And that was the Bears when they were like looking around. This is at home. Like, what's going on? Baltimore, 38-28. Jacksonville. And I remember this. There were some pick sixes in this, too. 50-10. We just laid it on them, dude. 108 yards rushing, 417 total. They went on a run of 471, 458, 420, 417, 465 total yards. And remember, these are yards that you didn't see then. You didn't see total offenses going way over 400 much like you do now. And then 26-16, kind of a grinded out game on the road at Tennessee. And I believe they're at, what was it, Vanderbilt? I think it was Vanderbilt because their stadium wasn't ready yet. I remember that game. They got into the playoffs, had a bye, obviously, because they were the number one seed at 15-1, 41-21, just devoured the Cardinals. And then Atlanta came in, and you know what happened there? A couple of things happened. We got up on them with a chunk of time left. We said, hey, we got the best offense in history. We got a couple of guys you could throw it to. We got an old vet who could just chuck the shit out of the ball still. He's not running here like he was there. And I remember even Cunningham had like a little microsurgery, like in our bye week. It was like, what? Oh, he's okay. He's fine. No problem. And, you know, his arm did start to wear down a little bit that year because he was throwing it so much.
And, you know, he was an older guy, obviously. But they did get him on the blind side on, I believe, like a second or third down. Made him hit him, strip, you know, got the fumble, and they scored a touchdown. So they kind of, I think it was like, what, 17 to 10 or something at that point. And it kind of lingered in to the decision with Denny. But before all that, of course, we had the perfect Gary Anderson, you know, miss, which did hurt. That would have put him up by 10. But people forget about Robert Smith. You know the Robert Smith that was going to be a doctor, and he was so smarter than everybody. And, hey, he's a smart guy. But, you know, that's the difference between book smart and street smart or football smart, however you want to look at it, Wonderlic stuff, whatever you want to say. Robert Smith had, like, three different first-down pickups where he kept going out of bounds, dude, with, like, 6-5 minutes left. We were driving with him. I was just screaming at the TV.
Yeah, I mean, you saw him at Ohio State. He had trauma. I think his coach said it. Yeah, he wanted to study, and that was his problem with Robert Smith at the time. And he came out. He's often injured, like we said earlier. And, you know, he finally kind of got the gears going, had a couple good seasons in this 98 hit, had a great game. You're right. He kept running out of bounds for some reason. That was odd. And then they took a knee at the half, which you said kind of led to, you know, that's when I first started to sink in is like, we might not win this game. But I still had total faith that we would. We're 14-1. Kicker never misses. All that good stuff. We just had momentum going our way. In that second half, we started accruing injuries. And, you know, whether we thought it was on purpose or not, we started losing all these defensive players, ankles, knees, shoulders, started getting picked out. And the game just kept getting tighter and tighter and tighter. It comes down to, you know, Gary Anderson is perfect for the season. Hasn't missed anything. It's money. Not too far. It was a 30-some-odd-yard kick. And, I mean, it's money in the bank. Up by 10. You kind of cruise through the rest of the game and, you know, snap, hold, kick.
24 yards. Well, actually, I don't think that was the one, though. I don't think so.
I think it was 30-something.
Yeah.
And but it was still a gimme for Gary Anderson. I mean, he hadn't missed. And this the way the game had gone, you know, that 3 points would have meant a lot. It's tough to talk about still, man. I mean, that's kind of where we started the old problem with our kickers around here. It just you make every one but the one that counts.
Right. And it was, I think it was like 38 yards, 36 yards. I looked at the wrong Anderson because they did have Mort Anderson on their side. And it was 27 to 20. Like you said, it would have put them up, you know, it would have put them up, I think with like a chunk of minutes left, would have put them up by 10. But you're right. I mean, Dixon Edwards, I think both linebackers got hurt. I'm not sure about Eddie Mack. I think he did too. John Randall got hurt. There was some major injuries that people kind of forget. That Denver team who had been peaking and had beaten Green Bay the year before, and they're going to repeat, and they slapped Atlanta all around that next, you know, that Super Bowl. That, it's not, people always kind of like, oh, we would have won for sure. Well, I don't know for sure on that one. That was a damn good squad, and we had lost some key injuries. But like you said, just leaving that door open for them, it was 27-17. Dude, even before this, though, look at this, dude. It was 20-7 when we got the ball back right before or when we got the ball with, like, whatever seconds left at the end of the second. A couple minutes left, they scored there. But otherwise, we were up 20-7. And then all of a sudden, it was 20-14. That's what that score was. And then they scored a field goal in the third. Put 10 points up in the fourth. We obviously only scored that one touchdown to go up to get to 27 in the fourth quarter. And it was Matthew Hatchett, dude. Remember Matthew Hatchett?
Remember Matthew Hatchett. Yep, he was that fourth wide receiver that saw a little bit of time. I think maybe Jake Reed had some injuries during the season, and he came in and played at that third spot. And I'm just thinking back now, sitting on my grandparents' floor, started the day thinking, all right, just one more. We go to the Super Bowl finally. And just first half, we rolled right through it, man. And All was good. Everybody was happy. And then that impending doom started to creep in beginning that second half, Chris. You know, elbows, guys going out, Dixon Edwards, all these injuries, like you had mentioned. And then it started to, the game tightened up. Anderson started to run the ball a little bit better. Things started to loose up defensively. And it just started to feel like, oh, man, is there a way that this game can get away from us? And sure enough, it did. And it was a sad, sad day in Minnesota.
The Dirty Bird, Jamal Anderson, and it was 27-20. Like I mentioned, and Mort Anderson added it to where it was 27-20 at that point, because it was 27-17. We would have had a 10-point lead again, missed the field goal. They came back, and then with 57 seconds left, and that's why we had about 50 seconds left. That makes a lot of sense. Terrace Matthews from Chris Chandler, Chandelier is what we used to call him back in the day, Chris Chandler, Chandelier, because he was always fucking hurt. They had that 57 seconds left. They got it 27-27. They did the kickoff, so that took off that little time. And then what do you make? I mean, dude, Denny, you got the best offense of all time. You got 50 seconds left. Take a fucking shot.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that was when I hit the I hit the ground, man, and fist in the carpet. I knew that that was just a bad harbinger for what was to come. You take a shot. You got Randy Moss. Take a shot. You got Chris Carter. Take a shot. You got a screen pass. You got anything like that could possibly
pass interference. You know, whatever. Something. It would have been something positive.
Yeah, 80% chance that something positive would have come out of that. And he did not do that, and we still hold that in our bag of regrets today.
Boy, do we, man. Oh, my goodness gracious. So, obviously, they went down swinging. Well, they actually didn't go down swinging because they didn't try to swing. They didn't throw a punch in that last 50 seconds. They ended up kneeing it, and his excuse was, well, you saw what happened before, you know. It's that old school coach. Well, you know, we just coach them, and we adjusted. We made an adjustment, and it's like, dude, all you would have had to do is, you know, make sure, hey, Randall, get an extra fucking tight end over on that on his blind side or something and say, hey, Cunningham, remember what happened in the second quarter? Just fucking get rid of the ball a tad earlier then. You know, if you're feeling any kind of heat, just fucking throw it, whatever. But they decided to take a knee. Still don't understand why. They must have been out of timeouts or something like that. That was kind of weird now that I think about it. But then, obviously, the next year, so that was done. Next year, we were 10-6, still a damn good club, fifth in the league out of 31 now teams. Jeff George, we mentioned him, was just like, oh, I love Randy Moss, dude. He put up 23 touchdowns in, like, a shortened season. He only started 10 games, 23 touchdowns, just chucking it with Moss, because Moss is like, oh, I love this dude, too, because he'll just fucking throw it. I could care less. And that year, and I had forgotten about this, at age 38, and he started 12 of the 14 games, Chris Dolman had come back, which I was like, oh, yeah. And Dwayne Rudd was on the club by then. We know Dwayne Wood. Kenny Wright was another addition. So basically that year we got, like, shellackled in the playoffs against a pretty good club in the Rams that went on to win the Super Bowl. And we won't get into year 2000. We'll save that for next year or next week. It's funny because I started thinking 87 conference run. 98, like, God, we do. And then 09, but then I forgot 2000 was a conference run, too. I started thinking, like, 2018, the end of – we got a ways now to wait to the end, near the end of a decade to try to get back to the conference final. But then I remember 2000, we did get to the conference final. So we're going to stop it right there. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention about just the memories and whatnot? I was at my apartment in Richfield with a couple of buddies watching this game, and like you said, it just slowly deteriorated. Then it was like, oh fuck, we are gonna lose this game. I can't believe it.
Yeah, that's the familiar feeling of being a Minnesota Vikings fan. And we want that to change. We hope that that changes soon. But you know, even with that Gopher season we had last year, you still had that sinking feeling, Even against the Penn State game, you thought, we're going to let this one slip away. And they just always seem to slip away. And it was refreshing that it didn't with those guys last season. But, yeah, I mean, that's a tough one to talk about, the 98 game, because it was just all set up for us to go to the Super Bowl, just like it was a couple years ago when we would have had that home Super Bowl, which would have been pretty nice at first. But, that was another one that slipped away with a dominant defense that could have definitely brought us there, but just didn't work out. Yeah. That's what I really have to say about the 90s. It was kind of a wash, Chris. We were all over the world in that decade. So it was interesting to see. And then we'll go on and talk about the 2000s at a later date. But yeah, man, that 98 is still too soon.
So we're going to talk, like you said, 2000s. Highlighting the 2000 and 2009 or 2009 season with Brett Favre obviously coming to the squad, and then I think, you know, 2018, I don't think we even want to go over that. It's just so fresh. I'm not sure about that, but we do. The next week we'll probably do the Gophers run, you know, that run that never happened, the 1996-97 Gopher run, and we have a good backstory during that season where the season started. We got going. We ended up together moving to California, and we were so happy that they were ranked, you know, high, because then they had national broadcast. But even on some of those, you know, they'd like lead Sports Center or be up, you know, in the top stories of Sports Center. So if we missed a game, we could really, they'd show like extended clips because they were. Well, were they really ranked? I guess not. It really didn't count. But so that'll be next. So we'll go 2000. Then we'll probably do that Gophers run. And then we'll kind of just feel it out. We may do a show, you know, if we sign a cornerback or two or make a trade for a guard or whatever, we'll do that. Other than that, in the next couple of weeks, we'll probably shut her down and we'll go from there. Because right now, because – came off the Gophers and Timberwolves season living in Loserville, we would already been done long ago. We probably would have just done the draft special. But once again, we want to thank everybody for listening to the shows. We'll be back next week. Peace.